Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Barbara Marlow, and she's the author of a book called A Brave Face: Two Cultures, Two Families, and the Iraqi Girl Who Bound Them Together. Barbara is a marketing and public relations director for a law firm in Ohio. She served on a lot of boards for nonprofits, and she and her husband live with this Iraqi girl, Tiba, in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio, where I grew up many, many decades ago. Welcome to Life Quest, Barbara.
Thank you for having me. This is great. I'm so grateful.
Well, good. I can just say right up front to our listening audience that I am really enjoying this book. I'm nearly through with it. I couldn't put it down, and I've told a lot of people about it. But this is a very detailed, interesting, and captivating story. And tell us all about how this came about and why this book at this time.
Well, the story started, do you want me to go from that point on how we got her here?
Sure, yes ma'am.
At the beginning? Okay, from the very beginning. It was 2006, and I'm heading out the door to go walk our dog, and there's an article in our local newspaper, a Sunday article, about children in Iraq that had multiple surgeries and couldn't get them because the surgeons had fled the country. And in this article, there were pictures of children that was really devastating, and one of the children that were shown was a little girl named Tiba, and she was 3 years old, 4 years old, sitting on her father's lap, and she had the most glorious, big, dark, soulful eyes, and surrounding those eyes was this terrible scar tissue that pulled down on her mouth. She didn't have hair, and her photograph just captivated me, and it just struck me right in my heart. And it was like everything blacked out around me, and I know that might sound kind of weird, but it did. And I was compelled to reach out to her, and I cut the article out and left it in my office, and I emailed the correspondent, and I said, if I can find her the help that she needs, would you talk to the family and see if she could come? And he said, of course, you know, he would do that, because the father, her dad, was hopeful that somebody would be able to help her. What happened was, in 2003, when she was 19 months old, the taxi she was in with her three-year-old brother ran over an IED bomb and severely burned her face, her head, her hands, and her brother was killed.
Oh, I see.
And, yeah, and so, of course, you know, this just was a story that just, like I said, it just captivated my heart. And so then I began the quest to see what I can do to get her here and get her the help that she needs. And I did make arrangements for the WIC, and I did contact Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital here in Cleveland.
Okay.
And they said, well, you know, we could evaluate her, but and we'd like to see her. You know, I can't commit to anything because we haven't had a chance to really examine her. So then I knew that I had to get her here. And that was a political quagmire because,
right,
you know, back then we were still at war in Iraq.
Yes.
And, of course, I thought everybody would want to help me, but then you find that you come up against a lot of brick walls and you go two steps forward and two or three back. So halfway through, about 6 months into trying to get her here, I was standing in my driveway and I was screaming at God and blaming him for everything as I tried to navigate through the politics of all this. And I'm asking God, you know, what is wrong with you, and why aren't you helping me, and you put her into my heart. And I was really having a temper tantrum. And as I turned to come back in the house, there was a golf ball marker at my feet. And when I turned it over, it said, God loves you. And I have to tell you, at that moment, I could feel like this chill go up my spine.
Yeah.
And I just knew. It was a feeling of peace. It was a feeling of, you know what, this is going to be okay. And I knew at that exact moment that everything was going to work out. It was the oddest feeling. And she ended up arriving 1 year to the day that I read about her. So that was July 16th, 2007, when she got off that plane.
Now, you connected with a variety of people. There's a James Palmer. Mm-hmm. There's a Steve Sosby. Yeah,
yes.
And they each had a part, didn't they, of moving this whole thing forward. And the whole, I mean, we think this whole immigration thing in the States is something new, and yet it was a mess back then, and full of bureaucracy.
Yes.
But finally, the little girl came. How did you react to each other?
Well, it was funny because I'm standing at the airport. We didn't realize it was 1 year to the day.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got off that plane, and it was very, very late, and she was just so itty-bitty, and she was only like 30 pounds,
wow.
31 pounds. And she was exhausted, and I knelt down, you know, so that she could be eye level. And
yeah.
I will tell you, I immediately fell in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with a photograph. And I was in love with that photograph for 1 year. And then when she got off that plane, it really cemented my heart. She was with her grandmother.
Okay.
And I had this little teddy bear in my hands that I extended to her. And here's this little frightened little girl who doesn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
There were some media people from the hospital that wanted to capture that moment
right.
for their records. And it was just, I just knew. I just knew that this was going to be a little girl who was going to be a force to be reckoned with. And so she came back to our house, and she adapted so quickly to our culture and to us total strangers. And I think she had a level of comfort because I had sent her a picture of me
yes.
and my dog at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this was definitely a journey, and this has been definitely a journey and a story where there have been many little pieces, parts, and
yeah.
people who have helped along the way. Many, many, many.
Now, her grandmother, Amal, is that correct?
Yes, her grandmother.
Grandmother, I meant. She had a different perspective on what was happening, it seemed. She was much less expressive than you are. And so how did that evolve?
Well, her grandmother had never been out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And had never really been to a big city. She had never left her husband that she had married when she was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she was now in her early 50s.
I see.
So imagine leaving your family and being in going to a country that, one, you're at war with, and you don't speak the language, you don't trust the food,
yeah.
you don't know where you're going, and you are having people operate on your granddaughter, and you don't even know what's going on and who they are and what they're saying.
Sure.
So I can only imagine how frightened she must have been as well, because she was totally out of her element and out of control.
Also, different interactions with different people. Some people were overly wanting to help, I got the impression.
Yes.
Coming at your door after reading things in the media.
Yes.
Solicited, kind of. Also, uh-huh. there were some strong prejudices expressed, as we still hear today, against
yes.
People from the Middle uh-huh. East. And so uh-huh. you had to deal with all of that, plus you didn't have children of your own, and so now
no.
all this joy of, I have four daughters, of chaos that happens in the daily life of a parent.
She was a whirling dervish of activity. And interestingly, you know, opening up this world of toys that were all hers
mm-hmm.
and that weren't going to be taken away, or that she had to share, an opportunity to learn along the way, learn a language, learn how to do things. For her and her grandmother, seeing a toilet that flushed,
yeah.
having an infrastructure was something completely new. Having a refrigerator that you could open and see that it was stocked with fresh water
yeah.
and fruits and vegetables. So each day I saw life, and I saw things that normally we all take for granted through a new lens, and it was very invigorating.
Yeah, this book is not only a story of the evolution of healthcare and part of becoming part of your family of this little girl, but it also, it seems to me, it's a story of you and your courage and your reactions and your learning.
Well, you know, I have a role in it, of course, and my husband, but I have to tell you, there is no doubt in my mind that this was completely God-driven,
mm-hmm.
and he is totally in control of this situation. And there were several things that happened, if I may share with you,
sure.
along the way. One was the golf ball marker that I
yes.
just told you about. But another was, she was 5 years old now, and her grandmother only stayed with us a short period of time.
I see.
And she's laying in bed, and in broken English, she asks me why I didn't have any children of my own.
Yes.
Of course, you know, that's a difficult question to answer anyway, but let alone to a five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, honey, God had other plans for me. I do lots of things with animals. And so she said, well, don't you know? And, of course, I said, you know, what are you talking about, honey? Don't I know what? And she says, well, my brother and your mother sent me to you to be your daughter.
Wow.
And I just looked at her completely dumbfounded because the accident was in 2003 when her brother died, and my mother passed away in 2003.
Uh-huh.
And she's telling me that the two of them sent her to me to be my daughter.
That's interesting.
And she had no idea that my mother had even passed away. So that was a very emotional moment.
I can imagine. And I know you've relayed, we want people to be curious, but buy your book. But they, you had other incidences that just seemed to be over and beyond this world. That the Lord was doing a Samuel in some ways, you know,
uh-huh.
And calling this little girl and being there. Now, there were just some other wonderful incidences when she was fitted with a wig, and we hear this a lot now about cancer patients and all this, but this was very much a turning point for Teba's life, wasn't it?
It was, because all she wanted was a wig. She wanted hair. It was so important to her to have hair, because as you know, when you look in the media, and even over there, everything is all about thicker,
yes.
Depending on where you are, blonder, shinier hair.
Uh-huh.
And kids made fun of her. And she wore a little hijab, and when she was there, and the kids would pull it off and want to know what happened to your face, what happened to your head. So this was very important for her to have hair. And when she came here, she realized that what she wanted to do was be a blonde, which was, you know, not exactly going with what her skin tones were.
Correct.
But, you know, we compromised and got her a lighter color, and it really gave her such confidence and such a boost. And it really, she just lifted her head up high, and you could tell that she felt like $1 million when she got that wig.
Yeah. Now, fast forward a bit.
Uh-huh.
She's going through all these surgeries and all these changes, but she wanted, or you encouraged, this whole concept of going to the Middle East for a visit. How did
right.
that work out?
Well, over the years, I always kept in touch with her mom, and I did that because what a gracious gift she gave to me to allow her to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And she really trusted me to take care of her daughter, and when you think about this, you said you have daughters.
Yes.
Could you send them away to be operated on in a foreign country where you couldn't go, you didn't know the people you were sending her to, and right. you didn't know the language?
Yeah.
That's an enormous, enormous leap of faith.
Yes.
And so after 10 years, and I had always kept in touch with her mom through the years,
mm-hmm.
her mom told me that she was experiencing some eye issues. And
mm-hmm.
I said to my husband, I says, we somehow have to get them out of Iraq. I mean, we couldn't go there. They couldn't come here. And we didn't know what we were going to do. So we figured out a plan, and that was to go to Dubai.
Oh.
And that was the only place I could get them out of and get them to.
Yeah, I see.
So that's what we did. So Teba and her siblings, and we all went to Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time her mom saw her in 10 years.
Wow.
And that was the most extraordinary trip, the most emotional trip. And when we had rented this apartment, and when her mom was arriving, a friend of mine who lives there was going to pick her up. We had Teba wait upstairs with some of our friends who came along with us,
mm-hmm.
so that there wouldn't be this reunion, you know, in the lobby of this apartment building.
Sure.
And I will tell you that when I saw the car pull up and I could see her mom, Dunya, her
mm-hmm.
profile, I ran out into the street and I started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so overwhelmed to finally meet this woman that I've loved so much. And she turned and saw me, and she jumped out of the car that hadn't even stopped. And we just sat there in the middle of the street and just hugged and kissed and hugged and hugged and held hands and went up to the apartment. And when we opened that door, and I said, "Tiba, Mom's here." And Dunya just collapsed into her arms.
Yeah. Wow.
She said, "You know, my little Habibti," but, you know, it was just a very, very emotional, you know, trip experience, and I've outlined all of that in the book. But I have to share something with you that happened recently, if I may, and it's not in the book. Nobody even knows about it.
All right, very good.
But last August, well, first of all, let me preface this by saying her mom and I have an incredible connection.
Uh-huh.
She knows when I have a headache and will send me a note or something that makes me think that she's thinking of me, and the same with me to her. And this happens over and over.
Very good.
In Dubai, we would always say the same things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this past August, I broke both my ankles at the same time.
Mm.
And I had to have surgery. It was just a weird freak accident. I came out of surgery, and I said to my husband, I was in Iraq, and I was with Dunya. I didn't see her, but I was with her.
Sure.
And, of course, he looked at me and rolled his eyes like, yeah, right. You know, you're just, it's the anesthesia. What is wrong with you? And I'm insisting that I was there.
Okay.
Well, I come to learn that at that same time, Dunya injured herself on her stove and sustained a burn and had to go to the hospital.
Mm.
So she calls me to tell me, Barbara, you were with me. You told me everything was going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
So I'm in the hospital, and I wake up saying I was with her.
Yes.
She's in the hospital saying, you're not going to believe this, but you were with me.
Fantastic. Well,
how about that?
And doesn't the Lord provide these encouragements and these comforts and these relationships?
He does.
You know, I thought about this, and, you know, there were chances that you would not get along with her birth mother. And just because. And yet here there's this wonderful connection. So what is happening now?
Well, we're hopeful that we can plan another trip to see each other, and hopefully that, you know, they'll be able to get out of Iraq again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal. That's our next goal.
Right.
You know, Tiba's now 17 years old.
My goodness.
She arrived at 5 years old.
Yes.
She wants to be a pediatric anesthesiologist or an obstetrician, and, you know, she wants to be able to have a clinic in the Middle East, specifically, mm-hmm. you know, in Iraq and maybe near the village where she grew up, sort of like a Doctors Without Borders.
Right.
And help. Tiba's a straight-A student and then some. And she's just a remarkable, remarkable girl. And I always tell her it's got to be interesting because you have two families that truly, truly love you and who get along. I mean, her mother and I never had one moment of feeling competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm the mom. No,
right.
I'm the mom.
Right.
In fact, Tiba was agitated with us because her mom and I were so united on everything. And we called each other the Amiraki mom.
Okay, very good.
As a matter of fact.
Okay, if you just tuned in, folks, the book is A Brave Face by Barbara Marlowe. Two cultures, two families, and the Iraqi girl who bound them together. Barbara, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
If you go to www.abravefacebook.com,
mm-hmm.
you will be able to get some free sample chapters.
Okay.
You'll be able to hear some of the chapters. You'll get a little bit of history, and then you will also be able to purchase the book from that site.
Fantastic. Barbara, thank you so much for being with us here on LifeQuest.
Thank you, and I never get tired of talking about this journey, so thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.